Of course not. I'm an investigator with Security Solutions. We're on contract with Cooper and Waters.
Paul Godfrey's firm, I added.
Yes, Detective Palmer, that's correct.
Nina, you can call me Nina. I gave up on reaching my car quickly and pulled out an umbrella.
Thank you, Nina. We've been retained to provide.
He hesitated a moment as I finished opening my umbrella.
Support for your investigation into Mr. Godfrey's whereabouts. The King family has endorsed the effort.
I recalled Lawrence Cooper's press conference from earlier today. Private investigators owed loyalty to their clients. Sometimes they were helpful, but things could quickly get out of control. Critical information leaked. I thought of Annie. We'd kept that detail out of the press, and I didn't need anyone else deciding otherwise. I can't comment on ongoing investigations. I needed to lose this guy and get back to work. Have a nice day, Mr. Huang.
You can call me Andrew, he replied,
repeating my words back to me. It was clear he had no intention of ending our encounter so soon.
I'm a private contractor now, but I have 8 years of federal work under my belt.
FBI?
That's correct.
He took a step closer. Personal space was important during polite conversation, and he closed in far too fast. I threw an edge into my voice. I'm sure the Kings appreciate your coming down, but it's always been a belief of mine that too many cooks in the kitchen spoil the chicken bog. He chuckled. At least he tried to. I could see the reference to South Carolina's signature dish was lost on him.
That's cute. Elizabeth is every bit as charming as I imagined it would be. I'm a Pittsburgh guy myself, so this is all quite a treat.
Goodbye, Mr. Huang. I started to turn around. His shoes clacked on the sidewalk again.
Hold on, Nina. Support is the word I believe I used. I'm only here to support your investigation.
It wasn't that this guy couldn't take a hint. He simply didn't care. We've got all the support we need. If we didn't, there are channels to acquire more. Official, non-private sector channels.
Nina,
you say you're a former bureau boy? You should know all about chain of command and how obstructive outside interference can be.
Cooper and Waters is a powerful firm. Mr. Godfrey's bosses are powerful people. If I was you, I'd welcome the extra hands. Might make your, what did you call it, chicken bog taste better after all. Might get it done sooner.
I appreciate the offer and the power card, but this conversation is over. Nice to meet you. His lips curved into another grin. He reached into his coat pocket and produced a golden money clip. He slid a white business card from it and offered it to me between his index and middle fingers like a cigarette.
Feel free to get in touch at any time.
I snatched it and stuffed it in my own pocket.
Have a nice afternoon, Nina,
he said as I backed away. He infused his next words with a phony drawl.
I'm going to see if there isn't a spot around here that serves chicken bog. I don't know what the hell it is, but nothing beats southern cooking.
Good day, Mr. Huang, I shouted and walked straight to my car without looking back. At the office, every phone in the cubicle seemed to ring at once. Since we'd broken the news, the tips had been rolling in steadily and mostly useless, but this was something else. I sat my book bag on the floor beneath my desk. Sammy must have spotted me walk in and sprinted to catch up because by the time he appeared, he seemed out of breath. Everything okay? I asked as I logged onto my computer.
Crime scene guys, he replied in staggered breaths. They've asked for a dog unit.
What? Why the hell wasn't I informed immediately? Has Burton been told?
A request for dogs meant there was something to be found. Something or someone. The run-in with Andrew Wong had startled me, but a major development? This knocked me right off balance.
Request only just came in, a minute or so before you walked through the door, he answered. Haven't had a chance to tell Sheriff Burton yet.
What was the reason for the request?
They found upturned foliage leading from the car through the woods. Said it looked like somebody walked down to the marsh.
I released my held breath. It wasn't as bad as it could have been then.
They could see that even with all the downpours we've had?
He shrugged.
They must be pretty good, I guess. Anyways, it's a hunch on their part. That's why they asked for the dogs.
All right. Then let's see what happens from here. I looked back at my computer, but Sammy still lingered in the corner of my eye. I swiveled my chair back to him.
There's something else I've been thinking about, Nina, he said, worry in his eyes. If this turns ugly, I'm concerned about the timeline between finding Mr. Godfrey's vehicle and calling it a crime scene.
I don't follow you, Sam, I replied. It was a lie. I knew exactly where he headed.
We sat on the vehicle for nearly a whole day before contacting the Kings. Time is the most critical variable when a person's missing, you know that.
13 hours, not a whole day, I corrected him. Not that it made any difference. And we had no reason to believe a crime had occurred. Sheriff Burton agreed. Nobody from the family had reported anything, and there's a record of me checking.
Still, his voice remained wary. With the history between your aunt and the King family, folks might question the way we handled this.
What about you, Sammy? My heart beat faster. Do you question the way we handled this?
No. I mean to say, I'm worried others will. Burton already has at least once. And if those dogs find a damn thing, you know he'll be up both our asses, he answered.
Guilt crept up on me. Sammy was right to voice his thoughts, and snapping at him would solve nothing. Certainly wouldn't satisfy Sheriff Burton's questions either. Questions we both knew he'd have.
Look, I understand where you're coming from. As of right now, we don't know which way this is going to go. I think it's clear Paul Godfrey has no intention of returning to his family himself. The best we can hope for is that he turns up in some resort town with this woman, Annie, whoever.
And the worst? I puffed my cheeks. I'm not going to go there yet. That's the crime unit's job, and the canine guys. We'll wait to hear what evidence they find, and then we'll draw conclusions. We'll move forward from there.
Sounds good to me, Nina.
Sammy softened his voice, and I apologize. I meant no offense.
No worries, I smiled. Do me a couple favors, though, will you?
He straightened his back, hands in his pockets.
Anything.
Get a hold of Jacob Wilcox. Let him know we can't wait till tomorrow to speak with him. He needs to come in today.
Sure thing, he said, nodding. What else?
I pulled the folded business card, Security Solutions, out of my pocket. Sammy glanced at it as I tossed it on my desk.
Let the Charleston lab folks know we'll have priority samples coming down the pipe for analysis. We need to get DNA from every person at Piper Point, cash in on the budget leeway Sheriff Burton gave us, and expedite sequencing to same-day status. I want to get ahead of this. When Jim asks, I want us to have answers. If the crime unit finds anything with those dogs, we need to be ready to move faster than we did before. Than I did before.
18. Gray. Would you like to use our phone, ma'am? The waiter asked. See where your friend is? No, thank you, I whispered. I'm sorry, Mrs. Godfrey. What was that? A cleared my throat. No, thank you. I have a phone. I'm sure she's just caught up in something. Lost in the rain, maybe. He tapped his notepad against the side of his slacks. Okay, ma'am. Can I get you another, then? What? My thoughts had been pinned under the unbearable weight of Annie's absence, the woman who'd given me hope. Her message implied Paul was okay, and if he was okay, then the chance to fix things remained. We could return to D.C. and figure it all out far away from Elizabeth. Together. But if Annie didn't show, I was back to where I'd started, waking up drunk on Christmas morning with no answers. No hope. The Riesling, you've finished it, he replied. Can I get you another? The empty wine glass. My next words came without thinking, as involuntary as breathing. Chardonnay, I'll have the house Chardonnay, please. Moments later, he returned with my drink. I took a large swallow and embraced the familiar fuzziness, the warm blanket. I could thank my nerves for the speedy blood flow. Hardly 5 minutes had passed, and I'd polished it off. I knew exactly how long it had been because I'd become preoccupied with the time. Annie was over an hour late. If she was lost, if she was somehow struggling to make it to our meeting, she would have called. What information did she have? Was she that frightened? The more the wine worked, the more open I became to the notion that she truly had gotten lost. If she had, I could start making excuses for her. It was in my nature to make excuses for Paul, for myself, for this random, faceless woman I'd driven to meet. I'd driven. Shit. Would you like another? The young man had returned to replace my cold bread with a warm basket. Yes, thank you, I answered. I always ordered my drinks in an overtly polite fashion, as if being mannered about it compensated for how many I asked for. His footsteps stopped, and he turned back to the table. It's cheaper to buy the bottle, ma'am. Excuse me? He leaned closer. Well, buy the glass. That wine's $9 a pop. Bottle's $28. There's about 5 glasses worth in a bottle. You do the math. I see, I replied, as though this information was all brand new. Only a $2 cork fee, too. You can take home anything you don't drink. I'll seal it back up for you, he added. Moments like this make me question my own disbelief in God, or the devil, rather. I forced a tiny grin. Yes, that sounds nice. I'll have a bottle then.
Just looking out for your wallet, ma'am.
He laughed.
Not that you need it.
He was only trying to pad the size of my bill, to increase his tip on a thus far entree-less patron. If only he knew the true face of what he was complicit in. The true, rotten face of it. A minute later, a pewter bucket of ice stood before me. A minute after that, a newly opened bottle of Napa Valley Chardonnay sat nestled inside it. He polished a fresh glass with a linen napkin and placed it on the tabletop.
Enjoy!
He smiled.
19. Nina. I turned the steering wheel, pointed my car down Atalaya Drive, the long, joyless road I'd spent my life avoiding like it held a hoodoo curse or something. It was my second trip in less than a week. I wondered what Auntie had thought each time she traveled down it nearly every morning for decades. Atop the marshy bluff, Piper Point's white facade stood in stark contrast to all the nature that swaddled it. A beacon calling to something, but what? Something ill. That much was for certain. In the rearview mirror, the evidence van followed close behind. Sammy came over the radio.
Mr. Wilcox says he can't come in today, he announced. Can't get Dale to let him off work.
I grabbed the receiver.
Does he know he doesn't have a choice?
Apparently not.
I thought for a moment. I've been meaning to get to Dale's Hardware all week. Auntie's place needs a few things. I'll head there after I wrap this up.
One thing to know before you speak with him, Sammy said to the sound of shuffling papers on his end. I finished with Jonas Hatfield half an hour ago. He knows Jacob, says he saw him having a physical altercation with Paul on the dance floor. There's more, too. He saw Jacob's truck take off south soon after Paul and Gray left.
I creased my brow. What?
South toward Paul Revere Highway and Piper Point. Jacob's place is northeast of town.
Jacob followed the Godfreys home? That was something to know.
You think he trailed them from Ruby's?
It's possible, he replied.
Where are you now?
Pulling up to the King house.
Okay, good luck, Nina, he chuckled. I clicked off.
My tires ground against gravel as I pulled up. Shutting my car door, I drank in the home. I'd never been so close to it in the daytime. Something seemed off about it, like it was out of place in the present, more fit for the pages of a history book. Yet here the home stood, defiant as the woman who kept it. Millions of dollars worth of broken down bleakness.
We'll be ready when you call for us, Nina,
the van driver shouted from his lowered window. He'd pulled up and parked beside me. I'd instructed him earlier to hang back until I had a chance to chat with Gray. I didn't want to overwhelm her or give her mother any excuse to hold things up. The steps groaned and whined under my boots as I made for the immense front door. A black and white spotted cat, very old by the looks of her, laid sprawled on the porch. Rocking chairs, worn from weather and neglect, stood motionless, frozen in time like everything else about the place. An ivory doorbell sat inside a brass molding. No noise rang when I pressed it, so I let the heavy bronze knocker fall twice. The cat skittered off with surprising agility. A wrought iron lamp hung above me, two of its four glass sides gone. A wind-worn copper placard with a stylized K was nailed into the door below the knocker, identical to the label on Auntie's Christmas card. Severance. Steps echoed from inside as someone made their way to the door. It clicked and swung open.
Good afternoon, Miss Palmer. Cora greeted me with a warm smile. She seemed to be the only genuine thing about Piper Point. How can I help you today?
Afternoon, Cora. I'm here with some folks from the sheriff's office. Can I speak with Mrs. Godfrey, please?
Oh? I better fetch Mrs. King. Do you mind telling me what this is about? She doesn't like surprises, you understand, I'm sure, she replied as she waved me into the foyer.
I swallowed a lump in my throat. Certainly. I've brought some evidence, folks, regarding the investigation. We're here for voluntary DNA samples from each member of the family. You too, if you'd be so kind.
Cora appeared understandably taken aback.
One moment. You can have a seat in the salon, if you'd like.
I should have figured Joanna would be gatekeeper to an audience with Gray. I waited in silence, save for the ticking of the sculpted grandfather clock I passed on the way in. A stagnation hung in the air. A musty, almost moist stench. Old homes, I told myself. Low voices from behind the dining room's far wall broke the quiet. A moment later, Joanna walked into the salon from the other side of the foyer, dressed impeccably in a navy skirt and cream sweater. I wondered if she always wore heels at home or if she stalked around the house in hose, just in case.
Miss Palmer, what can I do for you?
Her velvet voice matched the floral perfume she wore, daffodils and obstruction.
Did Cora not say? I asked. She tilted her nose up slightly. She mentioned something about DNA samples. However, Paul's not related to anyone here, as you're aware. He's only a member of the family by marriage, so I'm afraid none of us would be very helpful.
A woman obsessed with privacy. Nothing about Joanna King was ever easy.
Forgive me, Joanna, but that's not entirely true. It would be exceedingly helpful to have records from everyone to compare against any material we might find.
Material?
Correct, I replied, struggling to put my next words delicately. You're aware of the forensics team sweeping Paul Revere? Were we to find any biological substances, we can quickly determine if they belong to Paul or someone he was in close contact with.
She crossed her arms. I'd done nothing but generate more concern, tinged with a hint of morbid curiosity, no doubt.
We can get Paul's DNA from any of his personal items, a toothbrush or a comb, for instance, a shaving razor. She narrowed her pale eyes.
I suppose, but Cora said you've got a van out front. Don't you just need a couple swabs and Ziplocs for DNA? Seems like overkill.
That brings me to my second request. I'd very much appreciate it if you'd allow the guys to go through Paul's things and collect them. I clenched my jaw, bracing for a response. Joanna didn't waste a second.
You've already attracted enough attention bringing some nefarious-looking van to the house. What if a reporter sees them hauling out garbage bags of belongings? What'll they think?
There were no reporters out front. She knew this. I did my best to speak in a calm tone. I assure you, they won't think anything except that we're doing our best to locate Mr. Godfrey. I paused before adding sharply, and that his family is fully cooperating with our effort. She hesitated, lips pursed, likely weighing her options. As we stood face to face in relative quiet, the checks to Auntie Tilda surfaced in my mind. Here she stood, Auntie's benefactor, right in front of me. Those checks were about more than Seamus King, I knew that much. They had to be. I could ask her now, and then I'd have an answer of some sort. True or not, I could work with it. But I'd be jeopardizing what little goodwill I had with the family and the investigation along with it. It was painful, but I allowed the moment to pass.
All right, Joanna relented. You tell them to take their shoes off on the porch. The way it's been raining, they'll be tracking mud all over the rugs.
Thank you, Mrs. King, I replied, relaxing my jaw. May I speak with Mrs. Godfrey now, please? She stared blankly at me for a moment before turning to shout up the enormous staircase over her shoulder.
Gray! Come down here! Detective Palmer needs to speak with you.
Abrupt footsteps were followed by Gray's younger sister, appearing in the salon.
Gray's preoccupied at the moment, Charlotte announced. Is there something I can help out with?
This is about Paul's case, Charlotte. Miss Palmer needs to speak with Paul's wife. And fetch the twins, will you? She glared at me with disdain.
We'll all be giving DNA samples.
Charlotte turned white. At first, I assumed it was from the DNA request. Anyone would be jarred by that. Charlotte's hands fidgeted at her sides.
I'll bring the boys down right away, but Gray's not here.
Joanna seemed very startled.
Where the hell is she then?
20. Gray. The first of the early bird dinner crowd trickled in as I drained the last few drops of my wine.
Between a racing pulse and a hollow stomach, my head swirled as if I'd had two bottles.
Two bottles? There's an idea. What did he say the cork fee was? A couple dollars?
I'll have my check, please, I called to the waiter from across the room, hand in the air. He looked to be taking another table's order, but I couldn't be certain. Had he even told me his name? Funny, I'd sat here for so long and didn't know it.
Here you are, ma'am, he announced, handing me a black leather billfold.
That wine? The Chardonnay?
It was wonderful, I told him.
I spoke slow, struggling to enunciate each word correctly.
I'm glad you thought so, he answered. Apologies about missing your friend.
Annie. Paul's Annie, who'd stood me up.
You know, why don't you add a second bottle to this bill?
He bit his lip.
I don't think that'd be a good...
Keep it corked, I smiled. I'd like to have it again, sometime soon.
Certainly, he replied hesitantly. I don't mean to be impolite, but can I call someone to pick you up, ma'am? Maybe a cab or something?
So much for speaking slowly. He pushed a whole bottle on me, and now he's suddenly concerned.
Actually, I'm walking, I lied.
Mama was right. Lying did come easily for me. Quick. My lie satisfied him. He retrieved a second bottle and an adjusted bill. I wasted no time paying. Gathering my umbrella, coat, and bag, I made for the front door. I started off walking too fast, though, and caught a chair back to my hip on the way. The dull pain vanished as quickly as it came. As I crossed the parking lot, the rain barely registered. Fumbling for Charlotte's keys in my bag, I paused. I shouldn't be driving. But if I took a cab, if I came home without Charlotte's car, they'd all know what I'd done. If I could make it home and get right to bed, they wouldn't. I'd finish the bottle I'd bought, locked upstairs, and wake up sober. I'd deal with a hangover then. Fuck Annie, I thought, as I decided to chance the road. The Mercedes headlights flashed as the doors unlocked. A pinging reminded me to buckle up. I exhaled. I can do this. In college, I drove drunk enough to call it a hobby. Pennies. Francis told me once that if you stuck pennies in your mouth, you could beat a breathalyzer. Something about the copper, maybe? Not giving it a second thought, I reached into Charlotte's armrest and grabbed a handful. My mouth filled with metallic bitterness, followed by an unsettling sweet. I swished the coins from cheek to cheek before spitting them out and cranking the engine. White-knuckling the wheel, I pulled out of Cirillo's parking lot and onto Oleander Avenue.
Not so bad.
I shut my left eye so the double lines painted on the road melded into the usual single one. My thoughts went to the bottle in my purse on the seat next to me. Once I started drinking, it was impossible to quit. The only thing I could compare it to was forcing yourself to stop urinating before you'd finished. Painful. Unnatural, even. I pulled the wine out with my right hand. Damn it, I needed a bottle opener. To my right, I spotted a gas station and turned into it. I blinked. Suddenly I was driving again, wine bottle open. The cork sat impaled by a cheap corkscrew in the passenger seat. The gas station must have sold me one. Where was Main Street? If I could find Main Street, I'd be able to get back to the highway. Maybe Annie had gotten lost. This town was so damn confusing. I took a swig of wine. It held hardly any taste now. Might as well have been water. I cut a left. When I reached for another gulp, I found the bottle empty. When had I finished it? Maybe I'd had some in the parking lot of the gas station? My eyelids grew heavy. I began seeing things. Dreaming, maybe?
I was young, much younger than I was now. Arms. A young man's arms wrapped tight around me, belting my trembling body close to his.
You've seen the devil, haven't you, Gray?
The man asked. It was Matthew. His voice bubbled as though we were underwater. I couldn't see him, but I knew the crocodile grin he spoke through, the toothy smile that crossed his face, razor sharp.
You're a bad girl, Gray King,
Matthew whispered into my ear. His breath smelled rancid, damp onion mixed with metal.
You've seen the devil, and you're a bad girl now.
I stared deep into the looming mirror in the cellar, the one Mama had returned to Piper Point Stair Landing. I was much younger, and with fire-red curls. Matthew had darkened to a black shadow behind me. He kept whispering, but his words dissolved into distant mumbling, his mouth as if filled with marbles. I only smelled his foul breath. My eyes met themselves on the mirror's surface, a cracking, splintering pop. The glass fractured in two diagonally across my face. I'm a bad girl, I repeated to my broken reflection. I jolted awake to find myself on Main Street. At least, I think it was Main Street. The car hurtled towards a fork in the road. I jerked the wheel to the left, but the SUV seemed to slide out from under me as it spun a half circle. My body lurched in the other direction. A smashing sound tore through my ears. The airbag exploded, striking my face like a mallet. Then silence. Everything stopped. Frozen.
21. Nina. I tripped a bell wire as I entered Dale's Hardware. The scent of pine shavings and cigarettes greeted me as I made for the lone cash register to my left.
How you doing, ma'am?
A round man, Dale, nodded as I approached. He roused from a creaking stool and spit a slick wad of dip into a fast food cup.
Can I help you?
I nodded a hello. Mailboxes. The one I've got is rusted out from all the rain. You have any? He crossed his arms, sucked air through his teeth.
We've got a couple different sorts. Might try a plastic one. Won't ever rust. Head to the back wall and take a right. You'll see them in the corner past the hacksaws.
Thanks, I smiled, paused. And someone to help carry it out to my car?
Let me radio Jacob, he replied. I'll have him bring the dolly up.
In the store's back corner, a fluorescent bulb neared the end of its life. It flashed and strobed as I surveyed the collection of mailboxes Dale kept in stock. Footsteps and the mousy squeak of metal wheels turned my head. Mr. Wilcox, I extended my hand. Jacob removed one of his frayed earbuds and gave me a firm handshake.
Nina.
I'll be buying one of these mailboxes, I announced, after we talk. The loose earbud leached music, abrasive heavy metal screaming into the empty space between us. Turning the music off, he re-spooled the wire and stuck it in his jeans pocket.
I can take 15.
Someplace private? He flicked his chin to an exit door behind me.
Out back. Let me grab my cigarettes.
Behind the store, the loading dock sat a few feet above the concrete drive. Bits of paper trash and soggy mulch collected around a grate in the center of the lot, pushed there from all the rain.
Cowboy killers,
Jacob mused, referring to the fresh box of Marlboro Reds he packed against his palm.
You want one?
I don't smoke, I answered, before giving him time to put a cigarette between his lips.
What can I do for you, Nina? Or should I call you detective?
A hint of laughter dotted his last question.
Nina's fine.
Do you mind? I asked, looking down at the tape recorder I'd pulled from my coat pocket. He shook his head.
By all means.
I pressed record. I want to talk about Christmas Eve. A pink plastic lighter sparked alive. The soft color reminded me of Francis's comments. Which lucky lady's bedside had he lifted it from? He tucked the lighter in the same pocket as his earbuds.
And Gray's husband?
Yes, I want to know what happened between you and Paul Godfrey that night. I'm already aware of a confrontation. Cigarette lit, he took a glowing drag.
Not much of one, to be honest about it. The guy flew off the handle at me and Gray. We were dancing, but there wasn't any harm in it.
You kissed his wife. The cloud of tobacco he expelled blossomed in my face, and I held my breath. Cowboy killers.
His wife kissed me, he retorted, emphatic.
A point of pride for him, perhaps. Pride made folks behave in all sorts of ill ways. Can you explain what you meant by Paul flew off the handle?
Shouting, mostly.
Jacob's face held more than a whisper of apathy. Anything physical? Another drag on his cigarette.
He stuck his fingers hard into my shoulder, so I stuck mine right back. Knocked him backwards a step or two.
And then what happened? The ambivalence in his eyes was replaced by smugness.
He sized me up for a fight, best I could tell. Then decided it was a bad idea and yanked Gray out of there.
Interesting word choice. Yanked?
Hard,
he answered. You could tell that even though you'd been drinking? He shrugged.
That's how rough he was with her, I guess. Plain enough to see. Beer or no beer.
That reconciled with the concern Charlotte had expressed, but I'd heard Jacob called entitled, possessive, jealous, all in the past couple days. Time to see if he was a liar, too. And they left at that point. You had no more contact with either of them the rest of the evening?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
Another smoldering drag. Do you know a man by the name of Jonas? I countered, omitting the last name intentionally. When it came to names, people often filled in blanks before deciding if it was in their interest to do so.
Jonas Hatfield?
He asked, barely hesitating. That's correct. He leaned on the guardrail behind us, one steel-toed boot lifted to a low rung. Flecks of paint and hardened soil spattered them. I pictured those boots trudging through the forest's damp floor of pine and rotting fronds off Paul Revere Highway, then stomping through sawgrass and sinking deep into salty marsh mud.
Yeah. Holds a card night every other Thursday at his place. Texas Hold'em, mostly. I've been a few times. Why?
Because he was at the bar, too. I've spoken to him already. He shifted his weight, suddenly uneasy.
Why is that important?
I'd maintained eye contact through the conversation, but now I stared. He saw you, Jacob. He saw you leave the bar right after the confrontation with Mr. Godfrey. He puts you jumping into your truck and speeding off.
So?
His eyes wandered over my shoulder. His jawline tensed. I continued. Your place is north of Ruby's Pub. You took off south, right behind the Godfrey's rental car. He moved from the guardrail and straightened his back.
I got turned around. I told you I've been drinking a little.
Did you tell Paul Godfrey?
Why the hell would I do something like that? Follow some dick from D.C. just 'cause he shoved my shoulder? I shoved him back. That was enough for me.
You followed him because of Gray, Jacob. I know about you and Gray. You have a history together. A long history.
Doesn't mean a thing to me now, he replied, breaking eye contact again.
But I didn't permit him to glance away. That's not what I hear. I hear you have a tough time letting things go. Letting women go, to be blunt about it. You don't seem to differentiate much between women and things, do you? His voice grew petulant.
Who the hell told you something like that? Frances? That bitch is mad I'm not fucking her all the time like I used to. There's no truth to it. Bitch calls me every time she's drunk, begging for it. She's crazy. You can't trust her. Once she said she was pregnant and...
That's not all I heard, Jacob. I heard you took Gray's virginity. There any truth to that? Silence crowded the air between us. It finally broke with Jacob swallowing a stiff lump in his throat.
Yeah, that's true,
he answered, voice lowered. You were both about 13?
I don't know, maybe. It was a long time ago.
I took a step closer. You want to know something else? He said nothing, taking another long pull from what little remained of his cigarette. I went on, emphasizing each word as I did. That's statutory rape.
Like hell it is. I was the same age.
Of course, there'd be no way to stick him with statutory at this point, but letting him hear the words might knock him off balance. I'd seen good liars before, methodical liars whose cold eyes put worms under my skin. Jacob didn't come close. In the eyes of the law, it doesn't matter.
Are you threatening me, Nina?
Just stating facts. He tossed his spent smoke onto the concrete, grinding it beneath his boot.
There's limitations, or whatever you call it, for charges like that. You can't do a damn thing.
I smiled. That's where you're wrong, Jacob. South Carolina is one of a handful of states with no statute of limitations on crimes of a sexual nature.
A sex crime? Fuck, Nina. We were kids. Both of us.
I struck back with the question I wanted answered. Did you follow Mr. Godfrey's rental car after he took off from Ruby's? He hunched his shoulders and thrust his hands in his pockets.
Yeah, I followed him. Gray wanted me bad, and that fucker couldn't stand it. He thought he could pick a fight with me. I showed Mr. Washington how country boys handle things.
And is that what you did, Jacob? Did you handle things? He went on, eyes gone from spooked to aflame.
I flashed my high beams. I got him to pull off the road. And I whooped his ass, if that's what you want to know. Gray won't tell you that's what happened. She was too drunk to know one way or the other.
Do I need a lawyer? Did you assault Paul Godfrey on the night of Christmas Eve or early Christmas morning? I touched the button on my tape recorder, ensuring it was still depressed for on.
Call it what you want. I showed him he don't run things down here. And we don't care how important he is. And I'm done talking to you. You got any more questions? I want a lawyer by my side.
He began to turn. Suit yourself. I reached for the cuffs nestled in the pocket of my jacket. Jacob Wilcox, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you do or say can and will be used against you by the state of South Carolina.
What the hell for?
His muscles tensed like they wanted to fight back. But he held his fists. Turns out, Jacob could suss out the difference between a bad idea and a good one, if only occasionally. Assault and battery, I answered. For now.
22. Gray. The blackness that had swallowed me up began to recede, It unfolded slowly at first, one frame at a time. Then it crossed some invisible threshold, and the dam in my mind broke, everything rushing through. I stared up at a metal pole, plastic baggies of liquor and clear tubing strung from it. I'd gone to meet Annie, but she'd never shown. I'd gotten drunk instead. I drove. My body jolted, seized. I drove, and I... To my left and right were plastic guardrails. I was in a bed. As I moved my arm, something pinched the back of my left hand. An IV line was attached to me, held by strips of translucent medical tape. I made a fist, and the outline of the needle buried deep in my vein appeared. Someone spoke to me. A man's voice.
"Just lactated ringers,"
he announced, motioning to the plastic drip bag suspended above my arm.
"Fluids. You're very dehydrated."
My vision blurred, but he wore beige scrubs. A nurse. I was in a hospital. I wrecked. He went on.
"You're woozy from analgesics. I'm not a fan of narcotics."
He paused.
"Especially in these sorts of situations, but doctor's orders. You have a fractured clavicle, and you're going to be sore from the airbag, and the gastric lavage."
A throbbing shot out from my left shoulder, as though he'd summoned the pain. Spreading out from my chest, a heavy pressure followed.
"Can I get you anything?"
The man had taken on sharper features now. He was older, but his veined arms looked fit. I closed my eyes and shook my head to indicate no.
"All right, I'll get your family. They've been outside for hours."
My eyes shot open as a wave of nausea rippled outwards from my gut. My family. Charlotte and Mama and Paul. A painful lump rose in my throat. I swallowed it. Not Paul. Paul's gone. A door clicked open. Heels on linoleum announced Mama's entrance. "Hummingbird," she whispered, taking my bruised hand. "My baby girl." By the closeness between our faces, she must have kneeled by the bed. The nurse had vacated the room. Only me and her. The anguish in her words must be real, then.
"Charlotte went for some coffee across the street before they said you'd woken up," Mama continued. "I sent an orderly for her. She'll be here soon as she can."
She gave my hand a second squeeze. Questions. I wanted to ask questions. Did I hurt anyone? Was the car bad off? Would Charlotte forgive me? Between the aching and a sinking feeling of guilt, I'd lost the ability to speak. Was I in shock? Had they heard any news of Paul?
"I've spoken to..."
She hesitated, pain still behind her words.
"Someone. Someone who knows the county prosecutor. He'll take care of everything. There'll be no charges, Hummingbird. No charges. And we're going to get you better. Your body and your mind."
The fogginess that shrouded my thoughts prevented me from processing what she'd said. Then a second click from an opening door broke my attempt at concentration altogether.
"Gray,"
another voice called. "Charlotte." Mama stood as my sister rushed to my side. Her warm lips found my forehead. I forced words out.
"I'm sorry. Your car..."
"Quiet," she said, index finger to my mouth.
"Things are things. They're unimportant. You're going to be okay, and that's all that matters."
She offered me a tiny smile. I wanted to return it, but I couldn't. I had nothing to smile about. Truthfully, I wasn't happy to have woken up at all.
23. Nina. "Shit. Is she okay?" I asked. "Beat up a bit.
Cora answered, discomforted. Likely unsettled to be the one communicating on behalf of the family.
She'll make a full recovery, I'm told.
I'd phoned Piper Point to inform Gray of Jacob's arrest. I had more questions, too, hoping the details of a fight between the two men on the highway might jog her memory. Instead, Cora told me she'd struck a street lamp in town. What Francis disclosed replayed in my head. Was alcohol involved? Cora ignored the question.
As I said, she's expected to make a full recovery, Miss Palmer.
I sighed. Thank you, Cora.
You're welcome, she replied before she hung up.
My next call would be to the station. If alcohol was a factor in the accident, they'd be sure to let me know. My gaze wandered to Auntie Tilda, asleep in her hospice bed. It had been half an hour since I'd administered her meds, and I needed to get back to work. If I had to guess, Gray looked the exact same right now. As I walked back into the kitchen to retrieve my book bag, my phone vibrated in my pocket. Virginia area code. Andrew Huang. He'd called twice already. He must be scanning the sheriff's office website. Jacob's mugshot would have been posted by now. Jacob had lawyered up, courtesy of his grandmother, so I didn't have anything new yet. Even if I did, I didn't know Andrew information. I played his voicemail anyway.
Nina, it's Andrew. Give me a call at this number when you can. I've got some things I'd like to discuss with you.
Of course he did.
Maybe we could meet for a drink this evening? Let me know.
As I started to tuck my phone back into my pocket, it vibrated once more. Damn, this guy was persistent. But instead of Andrew, it was Sammy.
Nina, you need to come back in now.
I'm about to be on my way, I replied, book bag slung across my shoulder. Sammy didn't miss a beat. The dogs found blood down by the marsh. My heart stopped.
Running it against the samples from Piper Point now, but my guess is DNA's going to match Paul Godfrey.
The baying of German shepherds met me as I stepped out of my car on the shoulder of Paul Revere Highway. Their handler guided them back into the truck bed kennels beneath the strobes of silent flashers. Taut yellow police tape wound from tree trunk to tree trunk to tree trunk. I swallowed hard and approached the man waiting to speak with me, a Charleston crime scene unit insignia emblazoned on his windbreaker. The constant hum of cicadas soon overwhelmed even the dogs barking, loud and hostile.
Detective Palmer, he said, this way, please.
I remained silent as I followed him off the road and into the woods. Piles of decaying broadleaf and pine needles cushioned my steps. The smell of damp rot mixing with the saline marsh air lent a sinister air to an otherwise peaceful scene.
Upturned foliage suggests the movement of two individuals coming this way from the road.
Can you tell where they originated? I asked, thinking of Jacob's truck. If they came from the same car or different ones, for instance?
Not for certain. Asphalt's not really great for footprints, Detective. Not unless there's a bit of gravel on the surface. And with the rain...
He paused to find his footing in the swampy soil. A few more yards and he spoke again.
But they terminate down here,
he said, sidestepping down the slope to the tall grass and the foamy water's edge beyond it. I followed his lead. Ahead, the burst of a flashbulb accompanied the man photographing a patch of salt meadow and sawgrass, all of it staked and cordoned off with more ribbon. A woman knelt by his side, picking through leafy matter with a pair of forceps, a bundle of Ziploc baggies by her side.
Hopefully those will fit you.
My companion motioned to an empty pair of rubber boots a couple of feet from where I stood. I took the hint and slipped them on. leaving my own hiking boots behind.
Down here's where the dogs led us,
he announced, waving to the staked-out patch. My feet sank deep into the festering marsh mud as I traced the man's steps.
Sure enough, we found quite a bit that tested positive with luminol.
Oxidized in the presence of blood, I stated. He nodded.
Mr. Godfrey's iron-rich hemoglobin, to be exact. Two sets of tracks, but his is the only sample we've found.
Results back already?
Confirmation came in just before you got here.
So at the very least, Paul was presumably injured. If there'd been a fight, blood from Jacob might have been found, too. He hadn't displayed any obvious signs, bruises or otherwise, but then he'd been wearing jeans, long sleeves. Sammy had told me he was processing the warrant for Jacob's DNA right now. As soon as he got the lab techs a sample to compare with, some of Jacob's blood could turn up. How much is quite a bit? I asked. I used to slice my legs up all the time on sawgrass as a kid. The stuff's practically serrated.
Not a whole lot, he answered. And you're right, Mr. Godfrey could have cut himself on the grass. But I'm not inclined to believe it.
I wiped sweat from my brow. The closer to the water I drew, the more the air turned jungle humid. Why's that? He glanced toward the ash-colored sky, swollen with rain.
The way it's been pouring the past week to find anything suggests there was a lot of material present at first. Most of it would have been washed out, diluted.
We're looking at a transition, then? I folded my arms across my chest. Missing person to homicide? He shrugged.
Hard to conclude homicide without a body, but given the circumstances and the fact Mr. Godfrey hasn't turned up anywhere, that's my hypothesis.
My thoughts went to each of the people I'd spoken with so far. People like Jacob Wilcox and Charlotte, Gray and Joanna, the woman Annie, who I couldn't find. Nice to have a body for a homicide, I agreed. We need divers.
Already sent for, he replied. I've got an oceanographer coming up from Beaufort, too. Tides and currents have been a mess with all the bad weather, but they'll know where to look.
My question from earlier, who stood to benefit from Paul's absence, took on a newer, darker meaning. Who stood to gain from his murder?
24. Annie. I consumed news of Gray's accident with the same gleefulness that I had when Paul's missing persons report came down the wire. I set events into motion, and there's no stopping them now. They'll evolve and escalate and assume a chaotic life all their own. They already are. I spin a lock of my hair into a ringlet around my index finger. I should tell her. I should tell Gray. There's no reason Gray can't know the truth, at least some of it. Or maybe she can know the whole truth. The nasty, awful, rotting truth. Releasing my ringlet, it bounces once, like a spring, before it straightens itself out. No, that's not fair. It isn't right to do that to her. At least not all at once. But I could give it to her in tiny doses. Little bits and pieces of truth, spoonfuls at a time, like medicine, or poison. She won't realize the effects they have because they're too subtle. They might even feel good at first. And by the time she realizes the answers are killing her, it'll be too late.
25. Gray. There were no windows in my hospital suite. A digital clock above the doorway said it was 6:30 in the evening. The only light came from soft bulbs beneath a row of cabinets on one side. Everything reeked of sterility. On the tray extending over my leg sat a collection of styrofoam containers. Peas and chopped carrots, Greek yogurt, a cup of melting shaved ice. The nurse, the man with a self-righteous attitude towards painkillers, insisted on leaving the food.
"It'll do you good to eat something," he'd said as he made notes on my chart. "Your blood sugar's too low, and you're underweight as is. You're also vitamin B deficient. Common for folks who drink a lot."
He was right about needing calories, but the idea of eating repulsed me. Charlotte and Mama had gone for dinner themselves, and I'd been alone for the past half hour. To be fair, I'd tried for the yogurt, but the throbbing in my collarbone prevented me from reaching it. The movement my arm sling permitted was deceptive as far as pain went, but there was no point in ringing that nurse for more than the ordered Percocet. A single tablet, every 4 hours, not a minute earlier. Murmuring voices outside the door interrupted my thoughts. As the handle turned, I closed my eyes, feigning sleep, my only way to hide. Clicking dress shoes told me whoever entered wasn't a scrubbed-up nurse or doctor. Mama and Charlotte hadn't been gone long enough, and Mama wouldn't eat fast food. She'd have found a booth for the two of them to sit down and eat casually. Besides, I heard only one set of shoes on the tiled floor. Maybe it was someone with a clerical job to do, coming for insurance information, perhaps. As the person drew closer,